Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to All of It, and we're continuing our discussion from earlier with Leslie Manville and Liam Neeson about their film Ordinary Love. We want to open up a dialogue about how relationships with loved ones can be affected by illness. When it comes to family members or romantic partners, it can be difficult to maintain a balance between caregiving and self-care. Nevertheless, it's important to ask how we can be there for our loved ones while also being there for ourselves. Okay, team, All of It, we want to hear your stories. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Have you had the experience of caring for a loved one with a serious or chronic illness? What impact did that experience have on your relationship? And how did you find the balance between caregiving and self-care? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I'm joined now by Nora McInerney, host of the podcast Terrible, Thanks for Asking, which tells stories about the difficult and sad parts of life with honesty and humor. She was a contributing editor at Elle Magazine, where she wrote the advice column Ask Nora, and author of the blog My Husband's Tumor, which documented the couple's journey with her husband Aaron's terminal brain cancer. Nora, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You are so...
And thanks for saying my last name correctly. That is extremely rare for me.
I got it once. I can't promise it's going to happen again.
That was pretty good.
You've been so open about your personal experiences with grief and loss. When you think all the way back to the beginning, when you first started writing your blog, why did you do that? And then how did it evolve?
So I would tell you at the time that I had started that blog because I wanted a way to communicate with people that was not not a website that exists solely for sick people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something more efficient than sending out a mass text or a mass email, which I was in the habit of doing, and on which I would always forget a very important person, namely one of my brothers. Just, I could not remember to include him on this list of 100 recipients who would get these updates about Aaron's health. I would have told you it was that it was for efficiency. And when I reflect on that time in my life, I can tell you that I was doing it because we were so lonely and we were so sad, and we had been treated by even people who cared about us as if we were now just a sad story. And being pitied by people takes away your humanity. It makes you feel like less than a person. And I was truly doing my best to very passive aggressively create some sort of manual for the people who did care about us to tell them who we really were, what this story really was, which was not a sad story. It was a life story, a love story, a story of reality. And we wanted to be treated like people. So yes, I called the website myhusbandstumor.com because that was an affordable URL. But what I wrote about was our life. I couldn't even have told you what drugs Aaron was on other than they arrived at our house, they were expensive, and I made sure he swallowed them. But I didn't care about that. I cared about who he was and who he got to be in the time that he had left. And that's what I wanted other people to see and care about too.
You know, it's interesting. Liam Neeson said on his way out of the studio, he said, you know, this movie really is a love story. It's not just about the illness. It really is about them being in love. And I want to make sure people understand that that's really, really important. How, you know, and it's echoing what you just said. How did you stay in that mindset? How did you continue? And for someone who's listening who's in the same situation, how can you continue to be in that mindset? This is about us, not only about the illness.
I mean, I'm not accusing Liam Neeson of plagiarizing me, but the tagline of my website was a love story with some cancer, not a cancer story with some love. Because what happens when something terrible happens to you, and it doesn't just have to be cancer or chronic illness or even the death of a loved one, when something that is so out of the norm of what we typically share and celebrate in life, which are good things, when something hard happens to you, the focus of your life, your life gets very small in ways that you weren't expecting. And what I remember about those first few weeks in the hospital was that we had been normal 28-year-olds, 31, Aaron was 31, I was 28. Very important to note that he was an older man. And we had been people with careers and friends and who had plans for the weekend and plans for 4 months from then. And all of a sudden, our world had shrunk to a hospital, to a room, to a bed. And I could tell that people around us didn't know what to say and didn't want to say the wrong thing. Do I ask about this? Do I not ask about it? And so they avoided saying anything, or they avoided coming around. And I know that feeling because I've also been that person. I've been that person who was so afraid of saying the wrong thing, mm-hmm. that I just stopped showing up. And maybe not in the moment, but now I can look back at the people who showed up, maybe imperfectly, with a lot of gratitude because they were there.
Let's take a couple of calls. Gustavo is calling us from Jersey City. Gustavo, thanks for calling. I understand you're a hospice nurse.
Yeah, that's correct.
So what did you want to add to the conversation, Gustavo?
Well, I just think that what she's saying right now is just so important. I think that people forget that we're still people until the day that we pass away, no matter how sick we are. And I think that sometimes people feel like they can't approach anyone because there's somehow somebody new or something new. And what she said is so good. Who cares if you say the wrong thing, if you do the wrong thing? Just show up and give support however you think it can be. But also, you know, just respect the people's boundaries. But people get too scared that they're going to overstep and they don't do anything. But the reason that I called was just that a lot of the times people, when people lose their independence, they take out their frustration on the person closest to them. And I just think if people understand that before they go into that, it won't hurt them so much, and they'll be better equipped to deal with the fact that their loved ones, although they're doing everything they can to help them, are treating them poorly, but it's because they're losing their independence.
Gustavo, thank you so much for calling in. Nora, did anything Gustavo said ring true to you?
One, Gustavo, thank you for your work. Truly, that mm-hmm. is the most important work, and to show up for people in that part of life, which is also just as holy and just as special a part of life as birth, by the way. I just am very, very grateful for the people who do that work, because our lives were so touched by the hospice workers who were there for my family. I think that in my experience, Aaron was an angel even as he was dying, but I for sure took out my grief at the people around me, because I couldn't dump it, you know, towards him, because he was like a true, everybody says that about dying people, but he literally was perfect. I will never budge on that. And I think that a misunderstood part of grief, and your grieving even before a person dies, is that it is so painful that it will come out as things other than just crying. And it might come out as rage and anger. And I was very upset with my mother because she burned the wrong candle in my house. And I don't remember specifically what I said, but I know I hurt her feelings and I apologize. And I think that can be a really alarming part of stepping into a situation where you are expecting, I guess, just crying and some passing of the Kleenex. But there are a lot more feelings to grief than just sorrow.
My guest is Nora McInerney. She's the writer and host of the podcast Terrible Thanks for Asking. We're talking about caregiving in a time of chronic illness. Let's take a couple of more calls. Amanda is calling us from the Bronx. Amanda, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for doing this topic. I think it's really interesting to think about families and cancer. And one thing that I wanted to say was that, you know, a lot of times there's this idea that it's like a battle that you're going to win, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like you're supposed to be in warrior mode all the time. And, like, I think the thing that people don't realize is that, like, when you're fighting cancer, it's not really a battle. It's like an affliction. It's not something that you go into like a warrior. And I think that, like, one thing that people could really do, and I love this about hospice care, it's like you don't get out of this life alive, right? So it's like if you have cancer, you know that this may be it for you. And it would just be really helpful sometimes if people would just listen and not think that they have the answers. Just because you can Google something doesn't necessarily mean that you understand it. And I do really appreciate that there are people that specialize in this, and that there is sort of an idea in hospice care where it's like, okay, you don't have to fight. You can just live your life with dignity, even though you might be, you know, ending your life soon and willingly.
Amanda, thank you so much for calling. Let's take a call from Anita, who is calling us from Fanwood. Anita, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I love the show. I'm an only child, and my mom was living 2 hours from us. She was on kidney dialysis, and she had glaucoma. Finally, we decided together that it might be good for us to move near my husband and me. We initially put her in assisted living, but after only 6 months, she fell and had the well-known broken hip injury. And she had post-anesthesia psychosis after that, and it seemed to kick off Alzheimer's. And she ultimately ended up in a nursing home, but she was never happy there. And in the end, she developed gangrene in her leg, a complication that sometimes occurs with dialysis, and we had to put her on hospice. And she passed away within 2 weeks. But my point in calling was my life totally revolved around her care, and I totally lost myself and wore out all of my friends and coworkers with complaining, and it was very hard to do self-care or to get away for a while because I just worried all the time about her.
Anita, thank you so much for calling and appreciate you sharing your story with us. Nora, when you hear Anita's story, if there's someone else who is listening right now who's in a similar situation, can you offer some guidance?
I, first of all, just want to say, of course it was hard, and of course it was all-consuming, and of course you couldn't do anything else but just survive and complain, because you're an only child taking care of your parent, and even if you had siblings, it might have been extremely stressful and extremely, not just time-consuming, but emotionally consuming. And look, there's not enough bubble baths or meditation apps that will make that easier for you. The thing that will make it easier for people to take care of the people in their lives is like broader systemic changes to our healthcare system. So it's not your fault that it was hard. It's a huge systemic issue, and that is why it was hard. Because our country is not set up for us to care for the people who need care. We're lucky if we can get like 3 to 5 business days of bereavement leave after somebody dies. And I personally did not have, FMLA to cover my job when I was taking care of my husband. So all the people who are listening or calling in who have these feelings, it's not you, it's the system.
Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433, if you want to join our conversation about caregiving. My guest is Nora McInerney, writer and host of the podcast Terrible. Thanks for asking. Let's talk to Basima, who is calling us. Hi, Basima. Thanks for calling.
Hi, my name is Basima, and I'm calling from New York City. This was a really important podcast for me. I was myself recently diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. Mm. I had learned that my own mother, who I'd had a very, very difficult and tumultuous relationship with, was diagnosed with breast cancer in June of 2018. And you know, it was so shocking. And I knew that somebody said it earlier, that I just knew I needed to be there with her. And kind of going through this process with my mother, we kind of, you know, were able to just, I was able to be there for her and talk to her and kind of, you know, work on our relationship. And she would be subsequently diagnosed the following February with colon cancer. Mm. And then I would find out that I had breast cancer a month after her surgery. And if it wasn't for my ability to be there for her, you know, and I wouldn't have actually caught my own cancer because it had been misdiagnosed at the hospital. And just being able to share a very unique, story that my mother and I are both suffering from the same cancer, and that type of support really kind of, it's just been incredible in one way and like, you know, devastating in another. And so I wanted to share that, you know, it was all, you know, all consuming. It was mentally exhausting. And to so many points of, you know, other callers, points and suggestions that, you know, it's not a battle. It's we're just taking it day by day. And, you know, we have these, like, not these ironic moments, but somewhat ironic moments where she'll be at the oncologist's office and they'll FaceTime me and then tell me to go get a test that maybe my doctor hasn't suggested, and kind of being able to go through this. And, you know, she's more than double my age. So it's an incredibly unfortunate and unique, you know, position. But, you know, going through this has actually brought me closer to my mother, again, who I'd had, like, a very hard relationship with. She was very hard on me growing up, and vice versa, I suppose. But, you know, there has to be, like, in my opinion, some light or something good, you know, to take of it, take out of these situations.
Basima, thank you so much for calling, and we're sending all good thoughts to you and your family. So, Nora, we have to wrap up, but I feel like you might know something for people who are listening, some gem, some piece of wisdom that you really wish you had known when you first started out on this journey.
I think what I wish that I would have known as a person who has been adjacent to the suffering of others and a person who has been at the center of the suffering of my own family is that nobody can possibly do this alone. And the only way that we can possibly show up for each other is humbly. So if you need help, the worst part about struggling is that it actually is your responsibility to tell the people who care about you and want to show up. And what you need, even if what you need is you don't know what you need, you just need someone to do something. And if you are on the outside looking in, wondering, what should I do? You do the thing that you are capable of doing, and the thing that you will do consistently, and the thing that you can do without expecting a thank you note. And that's it.
My guest has been Nora McInerney, host of the podcast Terrible. Thanks for asking. Nora, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all our callers. This is All of It.